Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here with your other host, Mr. Barrett Dudley. Barrett, how are you?
Doing all right.
Still just breathing.
That's true.
Go swimming at all this weekend?
No swimming. I was really busy just, you know, talking to Jared about how I'm going to make him my my sexy secretary work in the office next to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's what you want. You want my Jared, my co-host from the Ross Bolin podcast, to be your, what is your name?
Siobhan?
Oh.
Is going to be the sexy secretary?
Oh, I thought
secretary?
You were trying to make a reference to Logan's secretary being his
buddy. No. That was a reference to Roman taking over the company and not firing Shiv, but making her his sexy secretary.
Yeah.
As he says.
He has some issues.
He does, a few.
They come up in this most recent episode of Succession. So let's just dive right in, because we're talking about season 3, episode 8, of course.
Yeah. Penultimate. You know we love a penultimate episode.
We do love a penultimate episode. As it has been highlighted on this podcast many times over the years, these are often the bombshell episodes of seasons for series.
Yeah, now some people might call this the penis-ultimate episode.
This was the...
Yeah.
Penis-ultimate episode for history. Because, among the many, many, many things that happen, first of all, let me just say up front, I don't feel like this was necessarily a more explosive episode than normal in Succession, and maybe that's just a tribute to just how wild this season has been.
Yeah, I actually don't think, I didn't think so either. I didn't watch this episode until last night instead of Sunday night, and so I saw a little bit of the hubbub
right
around it.
Yeah.
And there were people like, oh shit, can't wait for the podcast. And I heard like,
dude,
you know,
I got multiple texts.
Episode of the season and all that type of
Do
stuff.
Do you think Kendall's dead? I got that text. You know when I watched it, Barrett?
When did you watch it?
About 15 minutes before you walked in.
Okay.
I finished up. And
and people were just shooting shots like that in the group chat?
Yeah, bro. Yeah, bro. It was crazy. I was out of my mind. I had to get off Twitter. But it was a very strong reaction to the episode, is our point. And
yeah, it was, and I would just say that, like, obviously the ending is vague and a potential cliffhanger,
right,
which I think
which
really
we'll get to.
sent people in this direction. Overall, I'm with you. I was kind of like waiting for like look, don't get me wrong. The last 15 minutes of the episode, one of the funnier moments on Succession happens, just kind of like laugh out loud, slapstick, dick pic. You know, this is just like insane.
I mean,
insanity.
But also very tense,
Yeah. And then obviously there's the Ken of it all at the end. But I thought overall, I was almost like, what are they just going to go back to back party episodes, like party style episodes? For me, last episode was that was the hammer. This was a good episode of Succession that opened the door to more questions, right?
Now, one of the biggest cliffhangers we've had on the show for sure. But...
Yeah, although, look, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but
yeah.
I didn't think that this was a cliffhanger.
Well, and this is why I like doing this, where we review the episode up front and then we talk about it, because a lot of the time by the end of our discussion, I've changed some of my thoughts. So let's dive into the details of what happened.
Yeah, this is the big moment, right?
Let me just say, this happens sometimes on this show where the first 30 minutes will kind of get swept away by the chaos of the final half hour. And then this one, it's like a good 36 minutes of just nonstop, really big moments happening. Uh-huh. So you'll have to forgive me if I forget things from the first half of the episode.
Yeah.
Literally just watched it, and already in my head, I'm like, well, I just want to talk about the things from the end.
I was thinking about the episode on my way over here, and there were great moments that will go completely, you know, overlooked
because of the even bigger moments.
Yeah, like I just the whole conversation of Tom and Shiv making fun of Greg with the dating ladder thing was so funny. And it's like,
and again,
by the end of the episode, it's like out of my brain.
And you and I, like last week, you made the point, like it's obviously pretty patently absurd. It doesn't really make sense. And I'll be honest with you, last week I wasn't really with you. I was like, yeah, but I feel like they're just dicks. And that was a one-time thing. This week I'm like, okay, y'all know that he's better looking than both of you put together, right? Like it classic, just from a, just like a straight up non-biased sense, that dude is really good looking.
I guess he's so like goofy, dumb, and awkward and gangly that
he's easy to make fun of. I get
that. It's got to have to do with a lot of his personality.
Okay, I think that's the trigger right there, because as we see when he shoots his shot with the Duchess of wherever the fuck, he doesn't have much in terms of game.
Oh, nothing, none at all. Very
Which
little.
Is interesting, because when he brings up, he asks about the one chick that he's been flirting with for the past few episodes.
Yeah.
To Tom.
Whose name,
and
by the way? Have we talked about her name? Because it's Comfrey. Her name is Comfrey.
Like her first name?
Yes. Like Humphrey, but with a C on it. Her name is Comfrey.
Man, horny parents are like just a weird origin name that
I'm not aware of. I feel like it's a little joke that they never address. It's just there for you, and that's that. The girl that Greg is after, her name is Comfrey.
Okay, Comfrey. How about that?
Yeah. But no game on Greg.
He's explaining to them, to Tom and Shiv, that this other chick that he likes, Comfrey, is. He's like, is there anything there, though? He's basically asking if she's an airhead, if she's a dumbass.
Right.
Which is ironic, because he's an airhead, and he's a dumbass. he's not the cunning Greg I hoped that he would be. I rooted for him to be.
Yeah, yeah.
He's become more of an oaf. You know, the cousin Greg that we all knew and loved from season one
is
still here among us. Yeah. He has not grown all that much in the few seasons we've known him so far. So we see him shoot his shot. He fails miserably. And I guess that is the reason they keep harping on, like, the fact that this guy's got absolutely no chance. It's because he's got no game yet.
Right,
the thing with the watch, I was just checking my watch.
Can you believe the time? Oh.
And I'm assuming this is the $40,000
watch
that he was forced to buy by Kendall several episodes ago. So, when he was still in Kendall's camp, firmly.
Reed? Is the guy's name Reed?
Just
Kendall's
drugs, watch guy.
He's the drugs and watch guy?
Look, Barrett, he's got all the stuff, Barrett. Like, look, and just so you know, he's not a good guy.
He's not a good guy.
Bro, what a fucking character.
But at the end of the day, last thing I'll just... You're beyond the 6 foot threshold.
Uh-huh.
So you know well. Tall is all. That's all you need.
It's a huge advantage.
It's all you need.
It's a huge advantage. It's an undeniable advantage that... I mean, you know, I'm kind of a gangly guy too.
Yeah.
And I'll just say this. It offsets a lot.
Yes.
It doesn't long-term offset a lot. Short-term, people that, you know, that I've dated, married historically, when I act like a maniac, they say, you know, but he's tall.
Yeah, yeah.
But they only get that. It only works for so long. And then eventually they're like, fuck the tall guy. It's a thing that can be advantageous as a man at times, and I'm sure there are plenty of women who are like, I prefer short dudes, and there are tons of short kings out there.
But that's why I'm like, Greg, his height alone, like,
gives him a shot.
Yes, and kind of renders their jokes a little bit
odd. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all we're saying.
Yeah.
That's all we're saying.
That's all I'm saying.
So where were we?
Back to Kendall. We wanted to talk Kendall up front.
Okay, so...
Because we're talking about the episode
Kendall,
as a whole.
Kendall
was it all that explosive?
Yeah.
Was this a cliffhanger? How did you react to the Kendall
thing? Yeah, so Kendall in this episode essentially is a non-participant. He attends his mother's party where she kicks him out. I'm not clear on why he's asked to leave.
She's essentially... She's not necessarily siding with Logan, but she is... Because her fiance
wants
Logan
money.
Around at all the things so that he can schmooze and ask
and
for favors.
He's trying to elevate himself.
And Logan has said that he doesn't want to be at the same events prior to the wedding as Kendall is. So can they kind of divvy those up, right?
Ah, okay.
So Kendall's own mom is like, hey, can you not come to some of the events so
because
that Logan can
I need
be
to
there
be able
instead.
To do this with your dad. Okay,
yes. Yeah.
Got it. So from there, I mean, it's just more slaps
which
in the face.
Which is pretty devastating. Like, Kendall
Again,
is obviously
yes.
reacts poorly to that.
And it brought me to the place where, for the first time, I thought about their mother. And Barrett and I are watching The Sopranos on patreon.com/oysters-clams-cockles, as I would be remiss to mention every
sure,
week.
Sure, sure.
Where mothers come heavily into play in the psychology of men and their mothers and such. And it brought me to the question of what type of woman would marry a Logan Roy in the same way that we're asking what type of woman would marry a Tony Soprano or vice versa even. And I think we're starting to see she's a pretty cold-hearted bitch.
Yes. Yeah.
This lady, the conversation she has with Shiv on the couch alone
right.
where she's like, maybe I never should have had children. Like, all the shit she says, it's like, it's the kind of shit that if my mom said to me, our relationship would be over.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But by the end of their conversation, Shiv is like, you're my onion too. And they're kind of smiling at each other like, at least we have each other in this fucking so psychopath place. Like, it's, but their family dynamic is the reason the show's great.
Yeah.
But back to Kendall. So from the get-go, he's getting his ass kicked again. Too much birthday. Totally devastating.
Yeah.
I mean, rock bottom, right?
Right?
We're thinking the guy might be thinking about jumping off a building at one point in the episode. By the end of this one, I mean, he's asked to leave that thing. The whole situation with him being able to navigate his way into the company and take over is completely dead at this point. They're getting nothing from the government, apparently. That whole thing is squashed, or at least he's not a role player in it, and his entire participation is no longer relevant to the storyline.
Yep.
On top of that, he caves completely and says, fuck it. He goes and asks his dad, that he forces this sit down, basically, this one-on-one, that is another one of the best scenes I've seen in this show. And it's, I guess, one of the scenes that's probably participating in the buzz around the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's, you know, we live for these. Kendall versus Logan is the show dynamic. So when we get it in its purest form, it's beautiful. And holy God, it's like heartbreaking, but fascinating and infuriating. And you, by the end of it, you kind of feel like you understand both people a little bit better.
Yeah.
Like, I think Logan feels he did everything he could for Kendall, and he really has always cleaned up his messes. But I think Kendall feels that clearly Logan has never given a shit about him. He's clearly a pawn in his life, and that really all Logan cares about is power and money at any expense, including his kids. And there is no middle ground for these dudes to find themselves at.
Yeah.
But Logan's just so cruel, bro. He tells him point blank. When Kendall's like, well, you already, you know, you sent me that offer on my birthday. And he said, that was for fun.
Yeah, just a mind fuck.
That was a pure mind fuck, bro. Like, I was taking that, like, as, like, one of those beautiful moves that's both.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even a real offer, so he's like, I'll consider it. I'll fucking think about letting you get out.
Yeah, yeah, and there's also a layer to that it took me a second to kind of, like, register. But because of that offer letter and, like, just, like, the kind of depths of its cruelty, right, like, he kind of teased that $2 billion.
Yeah.
And so now Kendall wants the $2
billion. Right.
Right, because let's not forget that Kendall has all the agency in the world to literally walk away. He can go move to Thailand and become a monk if he wants to.
Right.
But he also is attached to all of this, you know, get out the laundry list. There are all these things that he still wants and needs, you know, that are the fruits of being a Roy. So the main
one of which his dad points to, is that he covers up all the mistakes he makes.
Yeah.
And is Kendall capable of operating in a world where there isn't a Logan Roy to clean up after the fucking car crashes into the lake and the kid drowns, which he brings up very directly in a way that ties directly to the ending of the episode.
Yeah.
So he says, how long do you think he was down there, you know, before he started sucking in water?
Right.
2, 3 minutes, 4, 5? And what were you doing? I mean, it's just the most brutal thing you could say to a person, except this is a father and a son talking.
Yeah.
So you're just like, Jesus Christ. Like, no matter your relationship with your parents, you watch this show and every single one of us is going, well, at least it's not that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's pretty fascinating how Logan's greed kind of extends to this family as well.
I mean, he does not care about these people.
But he also needs them to be close. He wants these people in his, wrapped up in his tentacles,
but
right?
But in the case of Shiv and Roman, I think it's for optics and move-making purposes. And in the case of Kendall at this point, and what he gets to in the conversation with him at the lunch or dinner or whatever it is maybe I want you around.
That's what. Yeah, maybe I want you close. Maybe I want you around.
But in his case, I think it's more because, like, God knows what you're going to do out there. Like, it's like keep your enemies, like your friends close, but your enemies closer thing, because Kendall, free of Logan, with $2 Billy in his pocket to attack with is a problem. And I think that's his main deterrent for making this deal at this point, now that he's thinking about it. Like, wait a minute, so I'm going to give this dude $2 billion. He's going to go walk away and really walk away?
Maybe, but you know, we to go back to the mother conversation as well, when the kids essentially picked Logan and that was a, right. you know, a giant win for him, or the comment that she makes about how he's never had anything he loved that he didn't want to kick just to see how many times he could do it and have it still come back and love him.
Right.
So
exactly.
there is this.
He's sick. He's a fucking psycho.
Right. There is this sick element that he has going on.
But the mom admitted that she made the decision too.
Right.
Because she wanted them, and she says directly, to get their shares.
Yes.
She didn't want them to lose their shares. So it went all tied back to the company and the fucking greed and the power of it.
Yeah. But
more important than a relationship with her children was them inheriting this bullshit. And look at it.
Yeah. But Logan, you know, as manipulative as it all is, he likes having these kids in his pocket. There is no question.
And it's for that reason, though. I mean, he's a psych. Like, he loves, it is that thing. There are some people who get off on that, like, how badly can I treat you and you still stick around and be my puppet because you need what I've got?
Yeah, it's a little, it's almost like Munchausen's by proxy.
It is. It's a lot. It's like that whole, what is it when you, when you're kidnapped by somebody and then you fall in love with them or whatever?
Well, the kids, Logan has, like, you know, Munchausen by proxy or something similar, and the kids have Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, they have Stockholm syndrome. And it's just so that whole scene.
Roman especially.
Yes. That whole scene with Kendall and Logan is so powerful. And we'll come back to that a little bit later when we talk about Jeremy Strong's New Yorker profile after a break. But back to the inner workings of the episode first. So Kendall from there, what else? Does he talk to anybody? I mean, basically his whole life has fallen apart. I'm not sure how much we see him between that and the very last scene.
After that, the next time we see him is in the pool.
Okay, so he's in the pool. At least two of his kids are with him. And it doesn't appear his ex-wife is around.
No, the kids have come with him on this Italian vacation
thing. He's getting some time with them. Yep. So, and I mean,
he doesn't seem to be spending it well. He's got
one beer, excuse me, in his hand, and we don't know what else he's on. And as we've talked about last week, this show has a lot of implied drug use that's not necessarily shown on screen. And I'm not saying it's beyond the realm of possibility that Kendall was fucked up on all sorts of things in the pool. Who knows? But the scene is his kids go, "Dad, we're bored. We're going inside," and he's left by himself. And when he's left by himself, he either one of two things appears to pass out from drunkenness, drop his beer bottle so that it sinks into the pool, and then drown, lose all of his breath out of his lungs. Or two, have a moment of despair where he drops his beer bottle and then breathes all the air out of his lungs. Like, you know, I've done that in the pool, bro.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's nearly enough evidence to point one direction or the other for the internet to go as hard as it did, to be frank.
Yeah, that was my read as well. Like, if you just want to dissect the clues, what we see, the reason why we know his face is in the water is because we see the bubbles.
Right.
Well, you don't see bubbles if you suck in the water. That's blowing out the water.
Well, and it's breathing out your oxygen.
It's breathing
that creates
out
the bubbles.
Your oxygen.
Yeah.
So the And then we think about what his dad asked him, what his dad told him, like,
how long
do
you
think
he was down there?
How long did he have to hold his breath? How long was he blowing bubbles?
Exactly.
How long was he, like, you
could
know,
have been testing it? It's that psychological,
so,
you know.
Yes, so it's he is. Don't get me wrong. If he was not at rock bottom at the end of the previous episode,
then he is now.
He is here now, or he has found a new rock bottom, because this is a level of despair and depression that they haven't shown with him. And it's we've already seen him, like, or we've already seen the clues that he is having suicidal ideations.
He's definitely bordered on suicidal behavior. Yeah.
And so I'm not taking away from that either. Like, he's definitely, it seems
he's
like he's considering all options. He's going through some shit.
Yeah.
But this was, he didn't just suck in the water and drown himself here.
Yeah,
I think that's crazy talk.
And I don't know that the I guess the only way you could try to draw it up is like, well, it's kind of Gatsby-esque, but like, dude, this would be a shitty exit, point blank.
It's also like, not a scientist here. Help yourself to a goddamn science book,
Mr. Scientist.
But it's like physically impossible to make yourself breathe in the water. Like it's.
You can't really drown yourself. You automatically start, like, eventually your fight or flight kicks in and you try to
free
yourself from the drowning. Yeah.
Yeah. So you had, like, unless you were trapped or weighted or tied down or
so intoxicated
literally
that you pass out to the point that you're unable to control your body. Yeah.
True. True.
Which I think just from the lift, I mean, he lifts his head, but he replies to the kids. He acknowledges them going in, and yes, he sounds shitty, but he's depressed as balls. His whole life has fallen apart. So, look, I'm 95% sure he's completely fine, and that everyone's freaking out for no reason.
That's where I would put it as well. And much like we've talked about how this show, you know, kind of needs Logan Roy.
Right.
For me, it also needs Kendall
equally.
And we're going
at this
to,
point,
you know,
for sure.
You already mentioned the New Yorker article, and we'll get there.
We
but
will.
Like, he's as much of a fixture as Logan is to me. And in fact, I could see the show moving on without Logan more than I could it moving on without Kendall.
I agree with you.
If I have to pick, I have to choose a direction.
Let's put a pin in Kendall and in Jeremy Strong, and we'll jump back to him when we do the New Yorker profile and cover the rest of the episode first. But that's where Barrett and I stand.
That's where we are on the drowning.
Yeah, he's fucking fine. He's not fine, but he's alive. Or man, I'm gonna have a lot to say next week.
Yeah, very much so.
So what else in this episode occurs?
Well, let's talk what happened before this. The big deal, the dick pic.
So early in the episode, Jerry approaches Roman and says, "Roman, you can't send me any more dick pics." And he's like, why, basically? Mm-hmm. Doesn't take her very seriously. And I was kind of confused by that conversation. I was like, man, they're just really giving us some weird details about Jerry and Roman's sex life now that I'm not really sure this is necessary. Well, it tied in very quickly. Because
It did. I thought my read there was that they kind of brought like the reminder of like, hey, Jerry's a married woman, or at least has a.
Well, she's also acting CEO,
at least dating this other guy. So she's got
right.
Who's there now on this trip, whatever his name is, I can't
right.
remember. Larry,
but also Lyerly? She's acting CEO of the company that his father owns. So it's problematic for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah, so a couple of reasons to address the pictures that he's been sending.
Yeah,
the items as they refer to them.
So you could argue that Roman, for the first time in succession through three seasons, over the past four episodes, I would say, has hit a streak where he's gotten cocky.
He's
feeling himself.
He is majorly feeling himself. He's on an all-time hot streak.
And man, that's always when motherfuckers are slipping with dick pics. Because, it's when you think you're so hot shit for just a second that then you slip and do the one dumbass thing that ruins it all.
Quick question for you.
Yeah.
Was it your read that he took the dick pic right there at the table?
No. It was my read that he had one stored.
Okay.
But if he took it at the table, I would say that's a little bit too outrageous to sell as an audience.
That's extra psycho.
Yeah, especially considering the multitude of, I mean, the magnitude of the dick pic. This was a full-on erection. Through the pants, like maybe taking in a restroom earlier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. He was almost like doing the tuck.
It was the boner tuck,
right.
But a photo of the boner tuck.
The phone, yeah. Uh-huh.
Which I don't think he pulled off right there, but if he did, what a move if he did. The guy's a fucking lunatic. That would make it, I mean, four or five times stupider, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay.
So he fires off this dick pic, and I think he says,
you want to celebrate with. Jerry had texted him, "Good job, Roman.
Like yes, you, like you did that
you
very
executed
well.
You did this well. Like,
and it was the height.
Smooth move.
I mean, it was the highest height to which Roman has climbed in life. That moment, right there.
Totally, absolutely.
And then it all came crashing down because he fires off his own cock shot to his dad.
Yes.
And for all the weird jokes Logan has that have been made about Roman and sex with his parents. Mm-hmm. Man, we didn't need this to happen. So his dad's reaction is very immediate, and it's to leave the room and to call in Shiv to basically discuss what has occurred, show it to her, Roman's erect penis, her brother.
Yeah.
And then discuss it with her in a sort of corporate-y way, non-family-y way. Both-y, it was weird. Then he just yells out Roman, makes Roman come in and straight up asks him, like, are you a fucking sicko? Something wrong with you? And Roman's like, oh, and just to say, when Logan looks at him, when they're at the table and he's just staring at his cock in the phone in his hand, and Roman is back to the sheepish dog that's just been beaten down. His body language has been bent back over.
The face is so good.
I mean, the facial acting here from Culkin was incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
In terms of just it's like, look. I don't know, for a lot of y'all, maybe you haven't experienced many of these moments yet, but there's these moments in life where you do something just, in my case, one of them was a misfired text message. This was in high school, mind you, a long time ago, but I remember misfiring a text message, wrong girl, and ooh, man, in those moments where you just, you know you've done something irreparable, and you can't take it back, and it's you're just fucked. Yeah. And that look on his face, man, it perfectly displayed that. And then he has to go and face his father, who he just showed his erect dick to. But, and even more importantly, he reveals the secret relationship he's had with Jerry this entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It gives Logan this pause of, wait a minute, if he's shooting dick pic, first of all, what's a dick pic? Explain it to me. How often do they happen? Who sends them to who and when and why? All right, now, if he's sending her dick pics, they probably have a little something going, or he's sick. And if he won't admit to being sick, which he's not, then they've had something going, which means this whole time that he's had a... It's like in Survivor, when two people team up and they don't tell everybody else that they've got a secret alliance.
Right, right. You've been watching some Survivor?
No, my dad loves Survivor, though. Loves Survivor still to this day. But Roman and Jerry had a little bit of that going. And
yes,
now,
yes.
So now, half piss mad, crazy old, but now on good meds, potentially, that seem to be making him more clear. Because
good meds.
Zero
yeah.
sign of mental
weakness
in this
episode.
He literally
just forgot to take the UTI medicine,
right,
and went piss med.
Yes, that was it. Now he's fine again.
Now he's fine.
On his meds. He's got that chick is on it. And literally she's on it, all right.
She's
on it. and the whole this whole Roman was right there. He was right on that. It's like he was Khaleesi-ing this shit.
He's Icarus, man. You know, he just flew too close to the sun.
He flew too close to the sun. He also Daenerys Targaryen did, though. Like,
yeah, yeah.
On the approach to the throne, things went awry. And I guess let me ask you, what'd you feel when it all came crashing down for Roman? What'd you feel?
So I loved the moment in the episode. As I've absorbed it, I have decided that I'm nitpicking here. Just
sure.
Full disclosure. It feels a little cheap to me to knock him off the hot streak with this.
Do you think this derails him from his path?
But it also does track with his character.
Very
right?
well. Yeah, he's like, got some sexual issues.
Like, this is the type of thing that would...
Roman would do, yeah.
...derail him and that he would do. And obviously, this having a relationship with the acting CEO is... that you're asking for trouble, man. You're that's a dangerous thing to...
It's a manipulative situation, is
to
Logan
get involved
it,
with,
right?
In the first place, regardless of the dick pic or not, you got to think this probably slips out somehow at some point and would have cut out his legs from underneath him in some shape or form. So having said all that, it worked. And it was a very, like, I laughed out loud and it was like one of those, oh my God moments.
Like no fucking
on
way.
The show.
Yeah.
And I'm all said, I'm okay with it.
I liked it a lot more when we got Shiv's wheeling and dealing around it, right?
So like she starting to use it, yeah.
Oh my God, she immediately smells blood in the water and goes, oh, he's fucked, and uses all of it to derail him to her dad, right? She tells her dad, like, point blank, Roman is a mess. This dude is fucking psycho. You really need to do something about this. This is a problem. She goes and talks to Jerry, and oh my God, the corporate Shiv, HR Shiv, is the most hateable of all the Shivs.
Very much so,
and there
yes.
are a lot of hateable Shivs.
Yeah.
One of the Shivs told Tom point blank in this episode that she didn't love him. And that was a hateable Shiv, but HR Shiv is still somehow more hateable.
Yeah.
And she just lays it into Jerry, like, basically, like, the position is that Jerry could use everything about Roman to her advantage. Now, Jerry has all this leverage that Logan didn't know she had.
Yeah.
And it puts him in a position where this woman who was once just this very easily thrown away acting CEO is now not so easily thrown away acting CEO. And he's fucking freaking out.
Yeah. And you mentioned this HR Shiv during that conversation with Tom, which turns dark quickly. She's talking about how she's going to fight. Right.
Right.
And she's listing like, all the people that she's going to have to burn off the map. Right. Until it's hers again.
Yeah.
And in this position, it's like what she has is either Roman or Jerry. She's going to axe one of them.
She's right? going mad she's, queen.
She's going. One of them is getting knocked off the board here.
Right.
Through this strategery.
I mean, I think both.
As it were.
And, I think both.
And that's the conversation, or that was the point of that conversation that she was having with Jerry as I read it. It's like,
oh, yes.
You either need to file this as a sexual harassment claim.
Which removes my brother
removes
as
my
an
brother,
opportunity to take the spot I want.
Or if this was a thing, then it's between you and you were, you know, letting all this happen, then like,
you're out.
Then you're out.
She's saying, you're going to take out my brother for me now. Or I'm going to take you out.
Yes.
But one of those two things is going to happen.
Exactly.
Which is beautifully eliminating Logan's problem, which is that she had leverage over him. And it's just going to be interesting to see how that plays out moving forward, obviously, as Jerry. Did you get a feel for where she stood by the end of the episode on that?
I did not, no.
Yeah, I mean, she seemed like she was taking it in.
She was pretty poker-faced.
Yep.
She handled that Shiv conversation as well as she could have.
I can't believe she handled it as well as she did. It was amazing. Shiv's just so... C-wordy.
So bitchy.
You know?
So bitchy.
Yeah,
there.
The ultimate. Yeah. She's so bitchy. She's bitch. She's a big bitch.
Yeah, yeah.
But Shiv's got her swag back, man. It didn't take her long. I mean, one little fucking window and she's right back in there.
Yeah,
man.
all she had to do was lay into Tom, tell him she didn't love him, have the most awkward conversation about egg freezing that's ever happened, I think.
I have to say.
And she's feeling great.
I've watched a lot of television. And I mean, obviously, you know, as a man and as a recently divorced man, I'm in a particular position to judge Shiv. I have hated few characters more than her at this point. And here's why. Tom is a total piece of shit. But at least he's a nice guy to her.
Right.
Right. Right. You know, like he drank his own cum out of a stripper's mouth on his, or on a, out of a woman's mouth on his birthday,
his
bachelor party. But he told her, you know? and he's like he's kind of like good at heart, comparable to all these people.
He's the Midwest bumpkin deep down. Yeah,
but then he's also the guy, the scumbag who's willing to do all these terrible Wall Street-y things that we all hate about Wall Street America. And the way she treats him, and I mean the beauty of this is that classically in cinema and television we get the reverse. The Tony Soprano to Carm,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
where the man is the toxic, totally, unbelievably hateable person.
Right, right.
And this is a beautiful thing that they've done in Succession where Shiv is the power, like, she fucking owns Tom. Tom can't do anything about it. And not only does she own him and he can't do anything about it and he's been squirming for several episodes now as a result, but she's willing to straight up tell him to his face in some strange form of a, like, it's like she was like, well, this is a good opportunity. Fuck it. I'll use it as dirty talk.
Mm-hmm.
Where clearly there's, at a minimum, shreds of truth to what she's saying.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the way she says it and the look on his face and the fact that she doesn't change tone even after his face is what it is, it is indicative of her delivering a very strong message, in my opinion, to Tom.
Yeah, it brought up a question for me though, again, which is, I'm not totally sure why she married Tom in the first place anymore.
He's a Ken doll. He's like just a Ken doll. Tom could be anybody, and as he put it, he's hung like a whatever and fucks like a bullet train.
But why does she need the Ken doll?
Because the same, it's the politics of it, right? It's the whole. Is Shiv going to want a real relationship with somebody? No, that would have been the dude that was working for the politician.
Right.
She wants somebody she can just use as a vessel to navigate what she sees as her life destiny, regardless of who else enters.
Yeah.
So it's like she liked him. You know, like she tells him, you know, Tom, even if I don't love you, I love you. And what she's telling him is like, I don't love you. She's expressing House of Cards love. She wants it to be like the president and his first lady in House of Cards, the series on Netflix.
Yes.
Where they're not really in love.
Right.
It's a partnership. Yeah. It's this deal. It's to where they can both rise. You're an empty vessel moron who I can manipulate and use when I need to, a tool. But also you're a bumpkin from the Midwest and you get to rise up in the ranks and have live this executive high-flying life on private jets going all over the map. And you have to be okay with me fucking whoever I want, doing whatever I want, and being an ass to you
and
whenever I want.
Being in complete control of if we have kids, when we have kids, when this relationship ends or doesn't end.
Right.
Like,
and if you're not okay with
that,
like, then you can fuck off.
Yeah.
That's basically what she told him in this dirty talk to me. That was like the full read was like, I own you. You can either realize your position and own it, or you're out.
Yeah.
And it was fucking, it was one of the more powerful scenes in Succession as well. So like, as we dig through the episode and we find scene after scene and we haven't even gotten to Madsen. So let's go there. It's just a crazy episode. But Madsen and this whole deal that Roman thought he set up that you and I were like, okay, I'm not so sure a deal where a guy pisses on your phone in a restroom is like bulletproof. And Madsen, it turns out, is basically, they try to, he's like full, he's Jack plus Elon.
He's going, yeah, the reference here was definitely Elon manipulating stock price either purposely or, you know, I'm doing air quotes here if you're not watching. But
mistakenly, jokingly, whatever he does. He's been in trouble with the SEC multiple times, warned multiple times. He does all kinds of crazy shit. He does Dogecoin shit. You know how it is with him.
But he, but that's definitely the reference. He's using the tweet machine to create,
pump up his stock.
Create hubbub and inflate the stock price. Yeah.
And he also likes to experiment with hallucination.
A little microdosing here and there. Maybe a macrodose every once in a while.
Yeah, he does some drugs. He's a little mushroom LSD type of hallucinogen dude. Which is a little bit like of a Silicon Valley CEO stereotype.
Absolutely.
And the thing they really dig into with Madsen in this episode, and they kind of bring his character all the way in after introducing him last episode, is that
he's going to do a deep dive to find the best mattress in the world. But that means that currently he's just sleeping on an air mattress on the floor.
Yes, that is one of
that's
the
what
many
they focus on.
One of the many things. which it that really is my point. He is the representation of what happens if you are if you're strictly a greed and success in a monetary corporate American way, if success to you is professional success, at some point you find out you were wrong and that's not going to deliver happiness. And in the case of Madsen, he represents what if you were the best or the hottest tech CEO in the world and you could afford everything and look at that property and the man can't even sleep in his bed because it's not perfect enough. he can't even make a deal because it has to be like it just everything about him is there's no version of the world now that can give him happiness. So he's just going to tinker with it. And it's why Roman interests him. Not only I mean, he tells him directly, I chew people up and spit them out. I squeeze every last drop out of them and then dispose of them. Like he's a Logan, right? He's not capable of real human relationship. Everyone is just a tool to be used for his means. And in the case of Roman, he used him to drive up his price and to get to a point where he could then say, I don't want you to buy me. I want to merge. I want equal partnership.
Yeah.
Which is presented in the meeting that Roman fires the dick pick off in and Logan Roy considers it.
They like it.
Or at least before the dick pick. We're not sure after the fact.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
They still like it. We'll see. But man, it was just a total mess. Madsen's whole scene, them presenting the whole Elon Twitter drama, Elon-esque Twitter drama was amazing. But then when they get to the point when it's him and Roman and he's flat out, like Roman's developed this bond with him last episode where essentially Madsen can see that Roman is degenerate scum and that there's really nothing this guy can do to harm him. And there's really no harm, I don't think, in opening up to him. So he tells him point blank pretty much everything about himself in a 2-minute monologue, where by the end of it, I was like, Jesus Christ, Eric, what's his last name?
Alexander Skarsgård.
Alexander Skarsgård, Eric. Eric Skarsgård, Alexander Skarsgård. I gave him credit for it last week, and I'll do it again. He turned out for this role.
He's such an interesting performer as well, because he really likes this type of role too. And I'm thinking of like True Blood and Big Little Lies.
Big Little Lies particularly,
where
he
chooses these bad guy roles, but they're not just like, they're not typically like run of the mill bad guys. They all have these kind of quirky, edgy wrinkles.
Weird wrinkles. Yeah. Yeah, man. Like Eric on True Blood was definitely a bad guy, but then you were also like, wait, is he? There were seasons where you were like, he's a better guy than Bill now. I mean, it was a very confusing character.
Gotta pour it on for Alex here. Now he is very tall and also just like off the charts good looking.
Well, he's an underwear model,
and also
type of
jacked.
Dude. Yeah,
and just I mean, you know, you shouldn't look that good in a black t-shirt, but he does. You're right. He's perfect for this role. He's playing it really well.
He must work out.
He must work out. I think it's, you know, I think about the years of Trump when SNL had a really hard time like doing much with it because he was so hard to parody.
I mean, Bo Burnham delivered it best when he said, is anybody joking at a time like this? Like, should I be joking at a time like this? What's funny right now?
Yeah.
That was kind of part of it. It was like, how do you parody that which is parody?
And that's almost the way that I feel with the nature of the tech CEOs and the venture capitalists and all of that. Like, they are already parodies of themselves.
Right.
Like, just go follow VCs congratulating themselves
on
Twitter.
Go watch Silicon Valley also.
Or watch Silicon Valley. Or, again, just follow Elon Musk. Right,
he's pretty upfront with it. Yeah,
like these guys are really hard to kind of take a beat on in something that's supposed to be satirical.
Well, they do a lot of things that make you ask, why would you do this?
And so, you know, to kind of, I feel like they're approaching it in the best way that they can, which is to really just kind of like examine what this person is like a layer or two underneath, instead of trying to be too kind of like funny with it or take cracks at it. It's really just like, what does somebody like when they get here, and what at that stage even makes you tick?
I mean, if you have everything and all the money in the world and your IQ is above everybody else, you're off the charts smarter than everybody else, you've beaten everybody you've ever gone up against in everything you've ever done, what is there? What is there to achieve anymore? And that's why you end up building fucking spaceships and launching yourself into space, bro, because these types of dudes and women, they're driven by something that there is no finish line for.
Well, you bring up the spaceships, and I think that it's very relevant to what Mattson says, right? What is he interested in right now?
Having
failure.
And also having the best of everything, which he says for the second time, where Roman's like, okay.
Well, that's what he wants. But what fascinates him
is failure.
Is failure.
Because that's interesting.
And it's like, it's funny to think like, well, so how about taking on something where failure is inherent and happens all the time, like building and launching spaceships? So it's kind of an interesting, another interesting parallel between Mattson and Musk.
And Mattson's character has been done time and time again. I mean, it's even done in Ex Machina to a degree. Damage sort of the CEO that's so smart and so good looking and successful and knows so much that he knows everything is fucked and there's nothing to achieve and nothing to be had and there is no God and everything is death and darkness. Right.
Yeah.
And I think there's some Jack in there where they throw, you know, this dude's dressing on all black and
right,
shit. Right?
Right.
Like he's moody as a motherfucker, that guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's been explored by philosophers and shit, like the double-edged sword that intelligence is. Like, the smarter you are, the more you know. But the more you know, maybe you don't want to know some of that stuff.
Right, right.
Ignorance is bliss was born of this idea. And in the case of Mattson, I think it's the exploration of, like, if the ultimate version of that. But that's what I loved about this character, Mattson, or love about him. Is that it didn't feel redone. It didn't feel to me like just a vague expression. I thought Skarsgård took enough from somewhere and of himself and put it into it to where it's like, when I'm watching him, I'm like, God damn, this guy's fucked up. Like, he has some serious, serious issues that he needs to address with a therapist would help. Which takes us to our sponsor for today, Barrett.
Oh, good.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp, our sponsor for today's show, will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling, but done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be available locally to many of you in many areas. The service is available to clients worldwide, by the way. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. So if you get a counselor that for whatever reason you don't click with, it's very easy to change. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available as well. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website, read their testimonials. Go to BetterHelp.com/dragon. That's Better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're still recruiting counselors all across the country. Special offer for the Clam Fam. You get 10% off your first month. 10% off at BetterHelp.com/dragon. Go today to BetterHelp.com/dragon to support the podcast. Get 10% off and get yourself some BetterHelp. Let's talk about Jeremy Strong's New Yorker profile quickly and how it applied to this episode.
So I've started digging into the New Yorker article. I've not gotten all the way through it.
It's quite long. It turns out.
Yeah, I mean,
as the New Yorker often is.
It is the New Yorker.
I got my cliff notes out of it, Barrett.
Here's what to tell you about the length. If you play it, if you'd like to listen to the article, 45 minutes.
Jesus God. Okay,
so so it's a long read, as they call them.
Yeah.
Hit us with the cliffs.
The gist of it is that Jeremy Strong is a method actor, to some degree, right?
And very much is inspired by and idolized in his younger days, guys like Daniel Day-Lewis, the most famous method actor of all, I would say. And Al Pacino and Dustin Hoffman are referenced, other guys who have done method or used something similar. So
he's super into that ideology, and it's very much the way he rolls with this character, Kendall. And apparently that has resulted in all kinds of different antics on set. But the broad, large, obviously, 45-minute article to listen to, they get into a lot of different stuff. But the big picture, most interesting takeaway to me is that he is method acting Kendall, okay? And Logan, his counterpart, is being played by Brian Cox, who I always forget is a classically trained British actor.
Yeah.
Okay? When I think Brian Cox, I think Super Troopers. And that is not a classically trained British actor. So Brian Cox is not a method actor. And apparently, these British actors who are just like, they're just masters of their craft. The greats. What in America, the method acting Daniel Day-Lewis thing is sort of seen as the ultimate version of the actor. In Britain, it's this more classy thing where you can turn it off whenever you need to so that you can live a normal life. And honestly, as a dude who has just mental health stuff and has known the entertainment industry for a long time, holy shit, the British have the right version. The version where you have to become the character so that you have situations like Heath Ledger, fuck that. That sucks. We need to go be like Brian Cox. Because what they get into in the article is while Kendall cannot turn it off, literally has to stay on. And Brian and the British see that as sort of like, oh, y'all can't act. If you have to become the character, you're not an actor, you're a psychopath. That's sort of their whole take is like, acting is being able to, in a moment, like, take in a character in a moment and become it, act out as that character, and then turn it off and walk away to the classically trained British Brian Cox. And then there's Jeremy Strong rolling around, just being Kendall.
Let's have it out. One-on-one, you and me.
Like, can you imagine dealing with that? I mean, the Man on the Moon or whatever that film is that's about how when Jim Carrey went method for the Andy Kaufman movie.
Yep.
is a fascinating look at what that would be like to deal with, like to what it would be like to deal with somebody who was method acting on a set.
Well, so yeah, and I'm not sure that it came from the New Yorker article, but I heard something about how, like, you know, stories from the Succession set, from the actors, from Sarah Snook and Kieran Culkin, and like everybody involved, is that they're all having a good old time,
and
they're all best friends. They're all like cutting up in between scenes, and they love shooting it.
Couldn't be having more fun,
except for Jeremy Strong.
And then there's Jeremy Strong,
who goes and locks himself in his trailer in between shooting because he has to stay method and in character,
and depressed.
And he's working, and he's like, you know, he's doing his thing, and so he's kind of like a, you know, he's not involved in all the.
But doing his thing requires him to be completely isolated.
Right. He can't partake in this because...
And that's the knock from Brian. It's like,
right.
Okay, dude, you don't even get to enjoy the fruits of your labor because you have to go be the actual shitty character you're playing? That's fucking awful.
And man, I am with Brian Cox and you, as you said. Like, method sounds really, really awful.
Oh, it sounds terrible.
And it's a little... dive into the New Yorker article, and you will get the sense that... Look... You saw what Jeremy Strong was wearing to the Emmys last year, right? He was in, like, he was ascotted up and, like, wearing very artsy suit. And that's the thing that we kind of, like, I think that the normies out here, we scoff at this a little bit. Like, okay, guy, this is the John Lovitz acting thing. Like, it's
like,
so,
calm down, buddy. It's entertainment.
Right, he's taking it so seriously. And method acting is that. It's just, like, it's almost like these guys are doing it to just...
self-sacrificial,
yes,
like self-righteous.
Right. It's a little self-righteous, exactly. That,
which in the case of Kendall actually plays into the character somehow.
Now, having said all that, he's phenomenal.
It's working.
The performance is incredible.
Yeah, it's working.
And one of the most
really well,
you know, and so entirely believable. And Jeremy Strong is Kendall. That, like, it's hard to knock at the same time.
Yeah.
And Logan, Brian Cox as Logan, doesn't necessarily have to plumb the same depths that Jeremy Strong as Kendall does, because
he's not
nearly as fucking broken and depressed. And
but I don't want to take away from the layers he's put in, man, with the mental health stuff slipping and the fucking weird sex stuff. And, like, he's got good layers there, Brian Cox.
Logan, yeah, yeah. Well, and so the other thing I was going to mention just about the acting comparisons is that Succession is a show that has cast a lot of stage actors, and Jeremy Strong is a former stage actor. He is a stage actor as well. But a lot from, I believe that if you dive into the CVs, since we're being British here, of the kind of the role players on Succession, mm-hmm. a lot of them are like West End or Broadway actors.
Okay,
which is typically more of that classical training. You turn it on, you turn it off. You have a laugh
with your pals after.
I liked what you kind of said, right? Is it acting if you're not doing that?
And I think that's a really good question. One that, honestly, I was always in this camp of, like, I idolized Daniel Day-Lewis because of the stories, right? Like, he fucking became Abraham Lincoln. Like, no, you don't understand. He fucking became Abraham Lincoln. And you're like, all right, dude, chill.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that shit's legendary to me. But now that I've had it presented to me in this way where I'm like, oh, that's wildly unhealthy, bro. And I look back on the Brittany Murphys and the Heath Ledgers and all the different actors and actresses that have been lost over the years to, like, mental health issues that pretty clearly stemmed from dark roles or dark experiences.
What was the Brittany Murphy role?
Oh, she just played all kinds of shit, and she was on a lot of meds for mental health stuff.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was, but her whole, I haven't watched the documentary yet. Okay, I don't want to misspeak on Brittany Murphy. I have no fucking clue what happened. But to put it simply, as somebody who's been in therapy and gone to a psychiatrist for a decade, and to love TV and film as much as I do and have thought about this a lot, what it would do to you to take yourself to the place that Kendall Roy is in life and to put your mind and your emotional body there and live there and stay there and be a method actor there in that place would be horrifically unhealthy.
Yeah, if you're a longtime listener, then I'm rehashing stories I've told already, so I apologize. But hopefully it's insightful to newer listeners. But when I did a couple of years of acting class,
yes,
it was essentially the style that kind of bridges the kind of classical stage acting with method, and it's called Meisner.
Meisner, yeah.
And like the tagline of Meisner is living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. So it's
a long tagline.
It's almost like kind of a quick way to describe it is almost like short method acting, where you like kind of
become it,
take your moment to become it, live it as it would be,
and then
you kind of exit it. But these classes, these Meisner classes, where we would practice this type of stuff, and we would practice the training exercise called repetition, where you're literally just repeating the same word back and forth to each other, and then doing emotional preps, and then doing scene work or character stuff. Like, these classes would typically take 3 to 4 hours.
Straight out of Barry or The Sopranos.
And, you know, it'd be like 7 to 11 p.m. And then on those nights, I wouldn't be able to go to sleep until 4 a.m., just like unwinding from it.
Dude.
And so, like,
I mean, just performing, even for like when we do the podcast, honestly,
yeah,
sometimes
you
there's,
get,
been,
yes,
there's
absolutely.
Been circumstances where I've had to record a show at like 9 or 10 at night.
Yeah, you got
to
come down from
that. And I can't go to bed till 2 or 3 in the morning,
yep,
because there's this adrenaline and this energy that comes with the performance. And even on our level, where you and I are literally sitting in fucking European lounge chairs in my goddamn home, we couldn't be more comfortable under a fan. The only uncomfortable thing being this fucking giant lights we have pointed at us. But even then, after a show, I'm like, damn, son, like, I don't want to talk for a while. Like, leave me the fuck alone. When other people try to come have a conversation with me after you and I have talked for an hour, I'm like, are you serious, bro? I just finished talking to Barrett for an hour about something.
Right,
give me
right.
a few.
Yep.
So I cannot, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean,
how
do you sleep when you're doing this method?
How exhausting it would be.
Right. Right, it's
and that would feed into it, which is how I think you get some of the unfortunate circumstances that have resulted
totally.
In people getting sick. But yeah, so in the case of this story, one of the other funny things that comes up is succession to everyone on the show is mostly seen as a comedy.
Right, right.
And then there's Jeremy Strong. Doesn't see that at all. Here's Adam McKay of Strong's portrayal of Kendall Roy. He's not playing it like a comedy. He's playing it like he's Hamlet.
Yeah.
And Kendall's quote is, Jeremy's quote is, I take him, Kendall Roy, as seriously as I take my own life. And the title of the column on The New Yorker, if you want to read the entire thing, is on Succession, Jeremy Strong doesn't get the joke. And the point is that, like, if you tried to approach him and, like, discuss, like, man, the Roy family is a fucking mess, huh? Shitty ass people, huh? Like, he'd be like, what do you mean? You know what I mean? Like, he is Kendall Roy. He's not capable of being a normal human when they're shooting.
Yeah. And
which is fucking crazy.
Sometimes you can pick up on some of this in like inside the episode or behind the scenes footage where they do interviews, because a lot of actors will say stuff like, you know, they do these for Handmaid's Tale sometimes, and Elizabeth Moss or Yvonne Yevstrzowski.
Nailed it.
They'll be like, oh, yeah, it's just that, you know, I really think that my character, like, she really wants this, but it's like, also, like, she does this, and that's all, you know, they examine both sides.
Yes.
And then you'll, and
talk about it from a third party.
They'll talk about it from a third person. They acknowledge that there's, like, right, like, there's good and bad in a character, or that it's two-sided.
The conflicted pieces of the nature of the character,
exactly.
Yeah.
And then you kind of listen to Jeremy Strong talk about Kendall, and he's just burrowed down into Kendall's point of view.
Yeah,
there is no other
Kendall's.
Point of view except for Kendall's.
Yeah, so I feel like he just tells you, and he uses I a lot too when he's describing. He's not just like, so Kendall feels like, he'll be like, so I think like that my position, you're definitely spot on. I did not think about this before we started recording, or you brought it up. Those after the episodes with him, I think he's always by himself too.
Yeah. Yep.
And he's always weirder than everyone else. And they always seem to be having fun. And then there's him. And that's why. It's because he had to stay in this dark shithole of a man's life.
God, I hope Jeremy Strong, when
is
they
okay?
like do a rap party, can like let it go for a little bit. And, like, have a beer with his castmates.
Serious take. I'm not going to sit here and tell actors how to do their jobs. But if you're going to do Jeremy Strong, Kendall Roy method acting, or do Heath Ledger Joker method acting, you need to have a psychiatrist
therapist.
And after the fact, you have to fucking recover.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. Because
that shit's dangerous, bro.
They've got the, now on set, right? Like for any type of sex scene, they have the intimacy coordinators.
Yep.
Now.
To make sure that it's all as comfortable as possible and everybody's okay.
What's happening.
Because like, God totally knows right. it didn't used to be that way.
They got
to
have the method acting coordinator on set as well, who is also a therapist, a licensed therapist.
They really should, man. Like, I'm serious, though. Like, they need to put, like, if they're going to allow them to perform at that level, I'm cool with it. The product is, in this case, undeniable.
Right.
But holy shit, they have to fix them after the fact. You can't just leave them out. Great job,
yeah.
Jeremy.
See ya.
And then he walks off set and he's still Kendall Roy. Can you imagine? He's just like, what do I do with my life now? It's the show. It's what's happening on the show. So next week we'll find out just how silly all of you are for thinking that Kendall was dead, or how stupid I will look for being as confident as I was. Maybe I'll be the Roman next week. I'll just fall flat on my face,
just
right?
Absolutely humiliated.
I'll fire a dick pic to you mid-podcast.
Please don't.
You don't want one? I've had my dick out this whole time. It's tucked and it's hard. I'm so sorry for saying the things I'm saying right now. Barrett and I are watching The Sopranos on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Come through, enjoy The Sopranos with us episode by episode with a companion podcast for each and every episode of The Sopranos. Friendly to both first-time viewers and repeat watchers. Barrett is our first-time viewer. I am the repeat watcher. This week, we've got Whitecaps, the finale of Season 4, one of the most famous episodes of The Sopranos. That being said, even if you didn't join us, if you go join on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles right now, you will gain access to the entire backlog. You can start with Season 1, Episode 1, watch at your leisure, and enjoy. You do not have to be caught up with us. It does not matter at all. Patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Pick a tier, support the Patreon or support the podcast as a whole, and also get a lot more Barrett and I in the way that you probably enjoy us most, which is breaking down episodes of a specific show like you did when we did Game of Thrones, like you do as we do Succession, at a very deep level with no ads on Patreon. Everything is brought to you by you in exchange for your direct support of us. So thank you very much for being here this week. We appreciate you. Follow Barrett everywhere at Barrett Dudley, Twitter, Instagram. Follow me at WR Bolin. Follow us at Clams and Cockles on Twitter, at Oysters Clams Cockles on Instagram, at Oysters Clams Cockles on TikTok. And we'll be back soon. Parting words, sir?
Oh.
Chunk the deuce to everybody.
I did. I just chunked it. I did it right on the screen.
You want to say a prayer?
There was something that I feel like I kind of missed, but I...
Oh, that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, but now I... Well, I was just now thinking of rethinking of it when you were closing us out, and we've gone long enough. I'll remember next week.
Okay.
There was the for the con heads out there, a rather failed marriage proposal.
Holy son of a bitch! Yeah, that was really awkward.
So
another,
that,
I mean,
yeah, that just was like floating out there in the wind with the heavy stuff.
As you and I have been digging through The Sopranos, I've gained this appreciation for episodes that kind of like leave you in a place where you're like, okay, I bet this is one where we rewatch and we're blown away.
I remember what it was.
What was it?
I last thing that I think is important to remember about the episode is that, just for to put a cap on Kendall, is that Kendall wanted $2 billion to leave the family. That was his request. I'll leave for $2 billion. So it wasn't all that noble, and it's like, you know, let me get away from the family and fix my life either. It was, I'll take that $2 billion. It's more of a bribe.
Right. But also in his
buy-off.
In his case, I think he sees it as, because he says like, I'll like write off any other inheritance. Like he sees this as like, yeah.
Like a deal
it's
for
a straight
Logan.
Up buyout.
Yeah.
Buy me out and I will go away. I no longer want anything to do with you people. But I love that, like, oh, I'm right back there now. When he tells them, though, like, I am not you, man. I thought that was the first time he's delivered a firm punch to his father. I know that man didn't want to hear that shit.
Except for that there was no offer of, like if you don't give me the $2 billion, then what?
There's no leverage, yeah.
I'm going to stick around and
continue to be,
like, sort of scratching at the walls.
And
like,
Logan was like, I kind of think I like you doing that, actually. So you know what?
Yeah.
Maybe you just stay here and entertain me. We'll see what happens.
Anyway, can't believe the finale's next week,
dude,
man. It's
finale
crazy.
Next week. Penultimate was incredible. Season on the whole, just utterly impressive
very
the entire
good,
time.
Yep.
I'm so fucking happy as a Succession fan.
Pretty good.
Caught 5 minutes by accident. of one of the new curbs, and it's where they're having the virtual fake funeral for what's his name, and then they find his COVID stash,
Albert Brooks,
Albert Brooks, and they find his COVID stash, and I was losing my shit laughing, but then I also was realizing, oh, I've never seen this fucking episode, COVID stash, fuck. And I can't wait to get to the new season of Curb as well. There's a lot of other stuff. I'm working my way through the great. So Barrett and I will have a lot to talk about in the future.
Absolutely.
Be back. Tell your friends and family about the show this holiday season if they like TV and film. And we would appreciate that very much. Thank you. Good luck and good night.
Bye-bye.